evening, James McGrath.
Well, if it isn't the Australian Elvis, how are you?
Do you know what? I'm going to take that as a compliment.
You should.
And it's the British Tintin. Although I think Tintin was always British, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I think he was. Anyway. I think he was a Brit.
Dude, can I just tell you, it's early again. What's going on? And this morning is earlier than early. My kids have been awake all night. I hate you.
So, and my question to you is, yet again, this was your idea. And how much do you think our wonderful listeners want to hear the start of every podcast, you pissing and moaning about how early it is? Because do you know what they expect? What they expect is high quality journalism done to the highest order and expertise around our key subject being Porsche. I mean, that's what they tune in for.
All right, mate, look, let's just at least make this promise to our listeners. That's what they're going to get from you this morning. From me, it's going to be an absolute mess.
Welcome to Curb and Canyon. So do you know, I used to script those intros and James would never do what was on the script. So now we don't, and there always seems to be a natural moment where it's like, yeah, there it is. There's the welcome.
Yeah, and you know, just like the videos of the week, you assumed that I read those.
Yeah. Look at you. You've become such an American. It just, for those of you listening, I can't see James right now. We use FaceTime to communicate during these sessions, and his entire face is, I don't know what that is. It's covered by the largest thermos coffee cup. And is that just full of what? Just filter rubbish? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, we call it Minnesota Brown. It's just the...
Oh, man.
It's you know, whatever you get off the shelf, in the filter, slap it in, put the water through it. It's practically useless. But you see, here's the thing. Next to my awful, terrible American Mr. Coffee machine, Spaceball fans reference, we call it Mr. Coffee. Next to that, I've got my beautiful Nespresso machine, which makes just epic, gorgeous, lovely espressos. But you see, if I put that on right now, yeah, you're going to laugh at that because that is also not as good enough coffee for you. Hey, look, if it's good enough for George Clooney's sunshine, it's good enough for me. But if I made one of those right now, the whole house would be awake because the fucker is loud.
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah, yeah. I hear you.
Anyway, which little Colombian boys grew the beans and roasted them on their backyard grill that made your coffee this morning?
Your expertise when it comes to coffee is surpassed only by your expertise when it comes to talking about Porsches.
All right, come on. What we got this week?
Oh, heaps. Lots to talk about. We're going to we've got some more congratulations. We're going to talk about, I'm a bit of a design tragic, so we're going to talk about the Porsche Crest. We're going to talk about it's going to be exciting.
I knew that one was going to itch your crack.
You knew it, right? It always has. Absolutely. Of course it was going to. Oh, my goodness. We're going to talk about buying back old cars. We've got some updates on a few cars, some pretty significant updates, actually. Some devastating updates.
You crashed Little Green into a kangaroo, over a wallaby, and onto the set of the last episode of Neighbours.
That's weird. It's like you think I'm Australian. or French, apparently. So my buddy Simon posted a photo. You know how on your iPhone, it'll just bring up photos, like a memory from 10 years ago or whatever? Mm-hmm. Today he posted one such memory, and it was his wide body 3.2 Carrera that he used to own, like a factory wide body, beautiful car, and he'd had it for not very long at all, and he hit a kangaroo, and you should have seen how damaged the front of the car was.
I'm sure
the kangaroo was reasonably damaged too. But, it's a pretty devastating photo, actually. I felt bad for him, bad for the room.
Please tell me, please tell me we can use that as the cover for this week's episode.
I will check with my good pal Simon and get back to you. Because who knows, there might still be a court case pending or something.
Yeah, those kangaroos like to sue.
Oh, they do. You know, they're just class action. They're really big on it, really big on it.
Feisty little buggers. Yes.
Oh, hey, and also video of the week today is one out of the archives, right? It's a fun one.
It is. Oh, yeah. No, it is. I've seen this one.
Your level of preparation is something else.
Dude, again, it's like 6 in the morning yesterday here. It is. It's absolutely precious. I can't wait to talk about this one.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, so I want to start. I've been talking about friends acquiring new cars. So finally, last weekend we went for a drive on Sunday morning in the hills, and Rocco, not to be confused with Choco or Blocco, I had to get in before you.
You beat me to it.
Of course I did. You're predictable now. Next, you're going to accuse me of being French when I say kilometers an hour. Rocco showed up in his amazing new Carmine Red 718 Cayman GTS 4.0. Oh, That's quite the long nomenclature, isn't it? Oh, dude, this car. It just, you know, there are some cars that just stick the landing in every regard. You see it and you just go, There it is.
Now, you see, for that car, I think the color is maybe the least important part of the formula that you just explained there for us.
Explain.
My friend Michael has the exact same car, but in the Gentian blue, or however you pronounce that blue Gentian color. Blue.
Yeah.
And when he turned up last summer to one of our drives, I literally couldn't take my eyes off that car.
Nah.
You know, the parking lot was filled with air-cooled and water-cooled mostly 911s, one poor, you know, SOB in a Cayenne.
You went in your Cayenne? You're such a dork.
But his Gentian blue, GTS, blah, 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 you know, absolutely just gorgeous car.
Yeah, it's funny because Rocco won't mind me saying, actually, he probably will, but he can't stop me. He's quite old and he finds it a little bit difficult to get out of bed in the morning. You know, he's all creaky and stuff like that. So he doesn't always meet us at the very start of the day. And so we met him at the top of, you know, one of the best roads that we do. And we'd all stopped there to have a bit of a break and stretch the legs and water some plants. And, yeah, then suddenly you could hear this car. You could hear it coming. Yeah, dude. And then he used to come around the corner. It was like John Bon Jovi bursting onto the stage. Everyone just went nuts. It was a very, very cool moment. So, yeah, pretty happy. Congrats to you, Rocco Blocco Choco. Good. I nearly wore my Uncle Rocco sweatshirt tonight in honor of the great man.
So, come on, let's talk about, this is going to be therapy for you. Let's talk about the new Porsche Crest design, because I before we even get into it, let me just say, I couldn't care less.
Okay, so I want to know, which is not an unexpected.
Because it basically looks the same to me.
I know. And it's funny, because I wrote all this stuff down, and I was writing, I wrote bullet points for it, and I thought, this is going to be entirely up to me to deliver this. It's not like James is going to step in and help out. So can I ask, why is this not of interest to you?
Well, all right.
Is it just because I suggested it?
Naturally. My default position to yours is always contrary.
Of course.
A huge departure from the logo, from the sort of the.
Imagine the outcry, though.
All of the design basics, you know, it's still the same shape. They still use the same colors. It's still obviously the Porsche brand. You know, I think there are lots of brands, and now please don't ask me to name any of them, but there are lots of brands whose like design has evolved over the decades, but they still in your mind look exactly the same. Like maybe it's the McDonald's arches, or maybe it's the Coca-Cola logo. They've always been presented slightly differently. To me, I know that there are a few different, you know, there are a few bigger differences with this one in particular, but you know, you look at it, it's the Porsche logo. It still is. It's still the Porsche crest. A few little fiddly bits have been fiddled with, but you know, who's against a bit of fiddling?
Saw that coming a mile away. Well, so here's the thing, right? So why do we get excited about the 911? Because that's just evolution, not revolution.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. But the crest is something, I mean, there's a really crass you know, comparison to make here, but
I can't actually think of what that is. I'm like, this is the most,
really?
So far it's the most intelligent conversation you and I have ever had, and you're thinking about crass things you can say.
I'm gonna bring it down. No, so the crest is window dressing. Okay, the 911, you get inside it, you pull it apart. You get an absolute thrill of your life. I mean, it's like the difference between looking at the bottle of Coca-Cola and drinking Coca-Cola for the first time. Because for many, every time you get inside a slightly different 911, it's a new 911. It's still a 911, but it's something completely new. So it's like looking at it versus experiencing it.
Yeah. Do you know what? I don't disagree. And bizarrely enough, you're right, though. So many brands do this. They evolve their logo. And actually, in the automotive space, it's particularly common. And in fact, when you look at the Porsche crest, it has actually seen design tweaks in 1954, 1963, 1973, my birth year, 1994, and 2008. So it has evolved over time.
I didn't know that. See, that there you go. I didn't know that. I thought, wow, they've finally done it. After all these years, they've changed it.
So, look, I mean, I think, well, let's not labor the point, because I suspect that given, you know, we're a 50-50 split in terms of our interest on this, our audience is probably a little bit the same. But
well, tell us what's changed. Like, I'm actually very interested to understand what's changed.
It's, do you know what? I think it's one of those things where you would look at it and think, huh, that does look different. There's something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I'll tell you what has changed. The texture behind the antlers and the Porsche text, there was a sort of a, I don't know what you'd call it, a mottled texture, if you like. That's gone. The Porsche text itself appears to be smoother. They have introduced a honeycomb pattern into the red stripes. The horse itself is a different horse.
Okay, that's weird.
It's a funny thing. You know, you always think about the prancing horse, the Ferrari. You know, you sometimes forget that the horse, which is the, I think, the insignia for Stuttgart, is my understanding. There's a prancing horse in the Porsche logo. And then the Stuttgart text, which used to simply be embossed, is now black. But, yeah, if you saw it, you see it on the front of a new car, which apparently they're going to start rolling them out back end of this year. I don't think it's going to have any sort of wholesale effect on the overall look of the car. But hey, it's interesting. It's in the Porsche space, and as a design tragic, I must confess that I did spend, let's say, more time than was absolutely necessary reading about it and looking at it and comparing the logos through the generations, and found it to be quite interesting. You're looking now, I can tell, because you've tuned out for me.
I know. No. Which is not unusual. What are you talking about? Yeah. So I'm now going down the rabbit hole with you, and I'm looking at the six different versions here on Porsche.com on the news page. Mm. Yeah, it is actually quite significant from one to the other. I'm not a big fan of the honeycomb.
I'm not a fan of the honeycomb. That's interesting.
No. I mean, like, it's okay. I don't need to throw that under the bus because I'll ruin it for everyone. But I don't really like that one. But I do like the fact that they've taken away the sort of, you know, the polka dot mottled background behind the antlers. That's fair. Let me ask you this, though. For all of the dweebs out there, myself included, that are actually quite interested in going to buy one of those and see if it'll fit on the front of their Porsche, what do you think? Is that the type of thing that, well, even if it fits, let's say it fits.
Yeah.
Could you be forgiven for putting that on the hood of Little Green?
Look, I think you could. I personally would not. Because if I'm honest, at the end of the day, I don't love it. I actually prefer the previous iteration. I actually like the texture. It doesn't look very today. It does hark back somewhat, but I actually really like the texture of the previous, well, every other version, basically. No, I would. I personally would not put it on Little Green. I have no problem with somebody who does. I just wouldn't talk to them and couldn't be friends with them. But no, that's do you know what? That's totally unfair. I would absolutely talk to them and be friendly to them, and then like say a lot of things when they left.
So it's funny this has happened because I need a new emblem on the front of my Cayenne because the Cayenne came with. The black and white version, as opposed to the colored version.
I was going to ask you what's your view on the black and silver?
So I actually think it looks pretty good on the right car, but on my Cayenne, it doesn't look good. It kind of looks like it's been sun faded, as opposed to it's an intentional choice from the factory, and that's what I thought it was originally. But the more I've looked at it, it's quite clearly, it's never had any color. It's always been the black and the silver. So I want to replace it with a colorful one, but I'll probably stick with the one that's true to the model as opposed to getting the new one.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Do you know what? Why don't you go the sticker lightweight?
It's funny you should mention that. Honestly, dude, it's funny you should mention that because I've been looking at a carbon fiber hood for Bluey.
Oh, no.
No, for real. A carbon fiber hood for Bluey. And the manufacturer of it, who designs custom designs body parts for race cars, it won't come with an emblem. Or at least it won't come with the divot for the emblem. So if I am going to get it, which I probably won't, but if I do, I'm going to go for the sticker. Yeah. Yeah. GT2 RS, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I'm not going to ask you. I don't want to blow up your spot. So, I'm not going to ask you what a carbon fiber bonnet costs.
Hood.
Whatever. What a carbon fiber hood costs. What does a carbon fiber hood cost?
Well, I think if you got it from Porsche, it cost you about $4,000. But from this particular supplier, it's about $1,500.
Right. About the price of some lowering springs, goddammit. Come on.
Dude, I'm the only thing that is needed to lower my car when I get in it. There are no need for fucking springs.
I saw you posted some really nice photos of Bluey this week, and the car looks so good with the whole front number plate thing going, a license plate, as you guys call them. But we've got to talk about the stance. This has to be fixed.
All right then, Mr. Design Guru. So how can somebody so finickety and anally retentive when it comes to... That's correct. It's a technical term. Look it up.
Okay.
So right now, my circular wheels are perfectly flush with the curvature of the wheel arches. It's a circle in a circle. It fits perfectly. You start lowering them and it ruins it.
Oh my God.
It just ruins the look.
Does it?
Like, so explain that to me, Mr. Design Guy.
It's not just about the matching of the curvature of the wheel to the curvature of the guard. It's about race car. It's about stance. It's about the car looking aggressive, not apologetic.
It looks aggressive when I'm in it with my middle fingers up being like, get out of the way, Karen.
Poor Karen. All right. Well, I can see I'm not going to convince you on that. And but just makes me a little bit sad.
The Rock, I had this conversation with Drew over at the Cool Collective, and he shamed me for a long time about trying to argue this, because I think he's even shamed people by putting stickers on their cars when they're too high.
Yeah, because well, he had that hoodie, no more wheel gap.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. There are some cars that look like that, but that is just one step away from being the Honda Civic driver with the wheels that are angled in and out. I mean, it's pretty close to, you know, Chav Central, dude.
That's what Little Green is then? Because Little Green's reasonably stanced.
Well, okay, maybe a step and a half away.
Well, then you should go the other way, right? You may as well just put on some BF Goodrich all-road tires and just go full safari. Do it. You've been talking about the safari thing for a while. I want to see you commit.
No. All right, so look, let's move on. Let's move on because I'm starting to feel a little A.
Attacked?
Underappreciated. B. Attacked. And C. Quite frankly, stupid.
The answer is D. All of the above. Okay, so this was really quite interesting because I wrote our show notes, actually for last week's show, and so you hadn't seen them, and then you posted something on Instagram. You posted a picture of your 991, and, you know, posing the question, does anybody ever think about or lust after a car they used to own? And it was interesting timing because my black 991 had come up for sale. And not only had it come up for sale, the seller, he used all of the photos that I'd used in my ad when I sold
it. Cheeky bastard.
Look, it didn't bother. To be honest, it didn't bother me at all. Why do I care? And because I didn't take those photos, I actually think when you're selling a car, I try and avoid taking photos that look overly art directed, overly lit, because I think there's a sense then from potential buyers that the car only looks good because it's had, you know, an amazing photo shoot done. So I just try and do good quality, reasonably straightforward shots.
You need to tell that to Andy at that, you know, our mate Andy at that podcast that we're not going to mention. Have you seen his 993 for sale photos?
Yeah, let's talk.
It's like he's submitting them for, a gallery showing. They're beautiful. That's some of the best shots I've seen of his car. And he published them the day he mentions he's going to sell it.
Yeah, to be honest, he potentially completely undoes my entire argument, just unpicks it a thread at a time in front of me with that post. Because, that is a spectacular 993. It is.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It's such a cohesive package. And the photography is, it's stunning. It's stunning. Congrats, Andy. I'm disappointed you're selling the car, but we've all got to move on at some point. And, what an amazing set of shots. Anyway, it did get me thinking, though. Do you ever lust after your old cars?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do actually. And I think I've mentioned it on Instagram once or twice in the last couple of months. My black 997 is in California. And after posting a photo of that a couple of weeks ago, the new owner, who I've been in touch with quite a bit, sent me a photo and was like, "Don't worry, it's doing well." And he's taken off the decals. And he's put new rims on it, so it doesn't look like my 997, but it still looks absolutely epic. And I said to him genuinely, if you ever think about selling that car, I would buy it back from you, and I think I would. And then just yesterday, I posted a photo of my gray 991, and the funny thing about this was the guy that bought it from me, super nice guy, a couple of hours down the road from where I live. His daughter, who's, I don't know, university years maybe, is more excited about that car than he is. Because having bought that car, or at least I think so, having bought that car, she follows me on Instagram, she comments on my photos, And within hours of posting that photo saying, you know, asking the question, does anybody miss the cars they've sold? She replies back going, oh, don't you worry. We're having great fun in it. So Jane, if you're listening, I appreciate that. I sincerely do. I don't know, though. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, we talked about the relationship between human and machine before, and a lot of people equate their ex cars to, you know, ex relationships. And in some respects, yeah, maybe taking back my 991 would be forgiving the partner that cheats on you. But with that 997, oh, dude, I don't know. My self-respect is just, you know, it's in the toilet. I would take that car back if it was totaled, and I'd rebuild it again. I loved that 997 so much.
Isn't that interesting? Well, it's funny because I looked at, I looked at the ad for my old 991, and that is a car that from time to time I regret selling, that I wish, because I actually think the brief that I had for that car, which was to be a combined daily driver and fun car, I wasn't able to, the car wasn't able to answer that brief for me at that particular moment in time in my life, what my day-to-day job and all this sort of stuff, what I was doing for work, it just didn't meet the brief. Whereas I think now it actually would. You know, the kids are getting older. We're rarely in the car as a whole family these days. The need for the family truckster has expired somewhat. So I think I could live with that car as a daily driver now. Coupled with the fact that it came up for sale just after my buddy Gerard had bought his 991 and I was somewhat enamored with his car. I thought, wow, he's done it. Maybe I could do it again. But of course, you do tend to look at these things through somewhat rose-colored glasses, right? Because I was sitting there and I was thinking, well, hang on, because that car didn't have the Porsche factory warranty. It had a significant failure with the transmission during my ownership, and which Porsche fixed as there was a goodwill gesture involved. So I was like, oh no, I'd want the factory warranty, and probably wouldn't want another black car. So, but for a couple of days, I was looking at it every day, dude. I kept looking at the listing and going,
really?
It looks good. It looks so good. So yes, I've been lusting after my ex.
So I hate to ask, and I'm sure there's an equally uncomfortable analogy to make here, but can I ask about the price, you know, what you sold it for, what it's on the market for? I mean, is that acceptable? Is it stinging a little bit?
No, actually, because the market has cooled. The market has definitely cooled. Okay. And I remember when I sold it and I posted something a couple months later about how I was missing it, and a buddy, Renee, responded and said, why don't you get another one? And I'm like, dude, I can't afford to now because they've just kept going up and up. And to be honest, the 991 market is a little bit skewed at the moment, I think. The .2s, the second gen 991s, seem to be holding value well. The 997s in Australia, at least, are just constantly coming up. Not at a rapid rate like we've seen in terms of the growth of some other cars, but that puts them into the realm of some of the lower end base Carrera 991s. And so there's starting to be that crossover. But interestingly, so I sold that car 18 months ago, and he was advertised the car. He had advertised the car for what I sold it to him. And I imagine there was a little bit of negotiation because the car has actually gone now. It would be interesting to know. Well, I mean, I don't really care to know, to be honest. But I think it was an interesting demonstration of just where the market's at. I think it's slowed a little bit. But I think there's I always come back to this idea of a 991 of being quite a sweet spot. Grand tourer, fun in the twisties, just do everything really, really well. So, yeah maybe one day. I would love to get into a second gen 991.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about this a little bit recently. The last few episodes. Yeah. I just love them. I like them more and more. But speaking of the 991, I actually got my hands on a GT3 first generation.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about this. You were fitting the cameras and all that business.
Yeah. It was just another local guy in the Twin Cities wanting Apple CarPlay installed in his car and decided to get a backup camera at the same time. And I was like, sure, yeah, I'll do that for you. And he's like, yeah, I've got a GT3. And I was like, I will definitely do that for you. Bring it over now. Yeah. Oh, God. It's just, I love that car. I mean, yeah. I just love it. Absolutely love it. It was in the, kind of, what was it? Press release white that it came in with the red calipers and the red.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, a particularly exciting spec, but still, it's just absolutely glorious. I found myself, as I was working on it, sitting on my ass and shuffling around, trying to get the fasteners out and that sort of stuff. I just stop and just look at it and just find myself gazing.
Yeah. Oh, rightly so. Do you know, it's funny.
It's so good.
Well, because I feel like, do you have particular cars that you have seen just in passing on the street, out and about, maybe during the week on your daily life that just you always remember them? And
for sure.
So there's one, I remember it vividly, driving near my work, and there was a white first gen 991 GT3. And I remember just seeing it and just seeing it in profile with the wing. And I just thought, that is just such a good looking car. It's got the wing. So yeah, it's kind of boy racer, but in white, it just settled it down just that little bit. And I thought, you could drive that. I could happily drive
that. Yeah, totally. For me, actually, one of the Porsches that stands out is one that I saw on the streets of London in the early 2000s. I just finished university, completely lost track of Porsches at that point. Just started my career down in London. And I was walking down the street and I saw Carrera 4S. And I think it was in seal gray or one of those nice kind of gray colors.
996.
And it was a 996.2.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely gorgeous. But as I walked past it, I got to the front end, and because of the lights and I hadn't really been following on what had been going on with Porsche at the time, I was like, wait, is that a 911 or is that something new? And I remember standing there for ages thinking, I like it. I don't like it. I like it. I don't. And like all the things that we've talked about in the last couple of years about the 996 happened in my head for about 5 minutes as I just stood there staring at it. And still to this day, when I think of that model, I think about that one parked in the street of Westminster and just thinking, I want to touch it. I want to just feel it.
It's gorgeous. Do you know, it's funny though.
Well, at the same time, I've got two hands.
Well, it's funny because I still remember the first time I saw a 996 C4S as well, because I hadn't been paying as much attention to Porsche in that moment, partly because, as I've mentioned before, I wasn't a fan of the 996 when it came out from a design perspective. And I remember actually just driving along right near where I work now, and I just happened to – one just pulled out in front of me, so suddenly it was driving in front of me and it was black. And I just remember seeing that rear light bar and just thinking, oh, man. Oh, man, they've just hit this out of the park. It just looks so good.
Totally.
And interestingly, the cat who's selling my old 991, his intention is to buy a 996 C4S.
Oh, nice. We could talk about 996 for a long time, but suffice to say, I think that was possibly the sort of the creme de la creme of the 996 generation, I think, the C4S, for many reasons.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous.
I agree.
So tell me about Little Green.
Let's talk air cool.
Did you really crash it into a kangaroo?
No. Do you know what? I did once, actually.
Oh, God. Little Green?
Yeah. It was so.
You see, there are jokes that I make.
I know,
because I love the Australian stereotype, and then all you do is go and prove the stereotype. You drove Little Green into a fucking kangaroo.
I'm happy to do that for you, mate. No, I did. No, so it was a Sunday morning, and I was doing just a solo spin in the hills, and it was, you know, sometimes the solo drive is the best drive because, you know, when you're out with friends, there's always that pressure, particularly if you're in front. You think I've got to get on it. I don't want to hold people up.
Yeah,
and I don't know about you, but I always have the sense that if somebody's keeping up with me, I'm holding them up. I always have this kind of thought in the back of my head that...
Me too. And it's often true because I'm in the base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sometimes I enjoy just getting out and driving by myself. And sometimes when I'm driving by myself, I'll rip. I open it right up and have a great time. But sometimes I just hit a nice pace where I'm just enjoying it, pushing it, but everything well within its limits. And I was having a drive like that and just came around a bend and this small kangaroo bounced up. There was the road had an embankment on the left-hand side and then a drop-off on the right-hand side. And he bounced up from where the drop-off was and then started crossing the road in front of me.
How big of a kangaroo are we talking
about? He was actually,
about?
I'd say a medium size, probably smallish, to be honest. And so I swerved to the right. I don't know why I'm making the steering movements as though people can see. It helps me visualize. So I swerved to the right and jumped on the brakes at the same time. And he just cleared me. He just got past me, but then his tail clipped my front left gun barrel headlight. And when I got home, I stopped. And I got out of the car to look around and he'd bounced off. So, you know, seemingly he was okay. He probably had a pretty sore tail, as to be said. But when I got home, you should have seen how scratched it was from his tail, because I think his tail was, and it was all wet. And so I think his tail was wet from the dew of the grass or whatever, but had caught all this gravel from the embankment he'd just come up. So he was just like a, you know, microfiber towel that's been dried on the road in the gravel a few times and then just whacked across the front of the car. But anyway, he was seemingly he was okay.
If anyone sees a now mature kangaroo in the Victoria area with a bent tail, you know what happened to it.
With a little Porsche crest hanging off the back of it.
Poor guy was just probably taking a slash. That's why his tail was wet.
Yeah, going back to
mom and
dad.
You came and disturbed him.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, no, look, Little Green. So, there is some news on Little Green. When last we spoke, what was the status? Oh, I think I'd mentioned how the shocks didn't get sent and then did.
Yeah, you told me about the whole fiasco about, you know, the couriers and your other mates, broken kit. But yeah, so far, I think you were going to be out of pocket because you weren't covered by warranty and you were, you know, feeling a bit down in the dumps about it.
Yeah. Okay. So update, when they did finally arrive, the word on the street was it's okay. There's nothing wrong with the shocks. So they're just going to need a service and they'll be fine. So great. Then, turned out that wasn't the case. The left front shock, which was the one that I feared had an issue, had a crack along one of the welds on the shock body. And so when they rebuilt it, when they serviced it, it was just leaking fluid out of this weld.
Oh,
so,
man.
Needed a new shock body, right? So I'm thinking, oh, great. So this is going to take 10 days to come out of Germany. I'm going to have to pay for it. It wasn't actually going to be overly expensive, thankfully, but.
Well, and how much are these off the shelf each? But I mean, before you start talking installation and everything, we're talking a couple of grand at least, right?
For a set of KWs? Yeah. I can't remember, but it's expensive. It's an expensive upgrade. Mm-hmm. And so I was pretty pissed that this expensive upgrade had had, you know, I would call it a manufacturer's fault. Now, it's not to say the car hasn't hit potholes and stuff like that. It has. But
or kangaroos.
Yeah. But, you know, that's I assume that a manufacturer that builds products to that end, at that standard, let's say, you know, has to build them to a certain amount of tolerance to be able to handle some of these sorts of impacts. Anyway.
Yeah.
I got a call then from my friend Tim at Nine Auto the next day, and he said, KW are covering the shock body, then you're not going to be charged for it.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, year and a half out of warranty. And I said to him, I said, and this is where it gets really good, right? I said, do I have you to thank for that? Because I thought maybe he'd gone in and, you know, made representations on my behalf and threatened to crack some skulls. And he said, listen, I said to them, and by them, I mean the Australian distributor, he said, yeah. I said to them, it's a bit shit that it's not covered by warranty. And they said, yeah, it is. We'll reach out to KW. And KW said, yeah, no problem. Let's send another one. So everyone, no one had to try. There wasn't a whole big palaver or argument or, you know, do you know who this guy is? He'll expose you on his podcast. There was none of that. and yeah, it sounded like everyone was just willing to come to the party. And then the even better part of it is that I was still expecting the shock body to be at least another week away in transit. And I got notification today that it has arrived in Sydney. So we should actually have it back in Melbourne by Tuesday. And hopefully, James, hopefully, I'll have little green back by the end of next week.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. Which is perfect timing. Perfect timing. Because I have a gap in my garage right now.
Come on, let's talk about it. Let's rip off the Band-Aid.
Sad day today. The GT4 is gone.
What? Yeah, I knew. Yeah, I should I pretend did. Like I didn't know?
Wait, tell me more.
Whoa!
It's a Curb and Canyon exclusive.
It is. Wow. No, to be fair, though, I've only known for a little while and I haven't told anyone. But, dude, I know how much you like that car, so it's gone. It's picked up.
Yeah. So it went today. It's one of those things, right? It's just about priorities. And my intention was never to hold on to that car long term. It certainly wasn't my intention to sell it this early on. So I've had the car 11 months. But yeah, like I say, it's about priorities. And right now, having two Porsches just didn't make sense in the current economic climate. I need to prioritize my business, my family, some other stuff. So, yeah.
Totally.
I went through the process and thought, I tried to convince myself to keep it. And I just thought I could, but it just wasn't the right moment to hold on to it. So, yeah. So we sold it.
Yeah. And, you know, okay. And, you know, let's face it. You've got Little Green, and that is arguably the better car, in my opinion.
Well, it's
and I'm not just your mate trying to make you feel better.
No, it's a really interesting point because I thought, okay, let's actually, I forced myself to go through the mental exercise of maybe I should keep the GT4 and sell Little Green. I thought I've got to at least consider that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the shortest 20 seconds of internal debate ever. Partly because, look, if I decided next week, and I said this when I sold the 991, if I decided next week that I wanted another GT4, I can get another GT4. If I decide next week that I want another 964, I might be waiting 6 months, 12 months before I find the right one. So it's just not that simple. In addition, because I've done, you know, we've developed that car so much, the idea of starting that process again, and not to mention the cost of that, I can't even conceive of that. And that car for me, it answers more briefs than the GT4 does. Does it drive or perform to the level that the GT4 does? No, but it is, it's far more capable than one would think for a car that's 33 years old. It's,
yeah,
I think air-cooled cars have a certain cool about them that the modern stuff doesn't have. They're cool in a different way. So yeah, that was never really seriously a consideration. I will say that I drove the GT4 just on the weekend with some friends, and oh, yet again, I was just amazed by how good that car is, how capable it is, how easy it is to drive it at pace, and it's engaging. Yeah. There's a lot to like about GT4s, no doubt. And I do think, I reckon I'll have another one at some point. There's unfinished business there. It was a cracking car. And the selling cars is always interesting, right? The transaction's always tricky. And I had a couple of people contact me. The first one had messaged me through Car Sales, which is bring a trailer or whatever.
Auto trader.
Yeah, because it's not an auction, right? It's not an auction. You just advertise it as a price. And he'd been messaging me, and I hadn't seen any of the messages, but he was just lowballing. So I when I finally saw the messages, I just said, "Hey, listen, at that sort of number, I'm not interested, and you and I are just way too far apart, and you won't get a GT4 for that number." Then I had another guy call me, and he said, "Can I come and look at the car?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." And he said, "I'm flying over from Western Australia. I'm flying to Melbourne."
Bloody hell.
I said, "Okay, far out. He's serious." So I agreed to meet him in the car park of a pub where all good deals are done. And anyway, he messages me. He says, "I'm standing over near the entrance, and all I can see is this bent over old man." And I'm like, where is he? And then I see this bent over old man looking at his mobile phone when I message him back. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's him. So he sort of hobbles over towards me. I'm not kidding. I reckon he would have been 78, probably, this dude. But he'd rolled up in a very well patinaed, very well used Lotus Exige. And he was looking for something else. And I said to him, he just had a vibe. He reminded me of some of the people my dad used to go motor racing with. And I said, "Paul, you got some motor racing in your history?" And he said, "Yeah, I've still got a couple of Formula Fords." And so he's this guy who's been racing all his life. And then he starts telling me about all of these roads he had driven just weeks before in his Lotus with his wife. And all the roads are the roads that we drive in Alpine Range Rally. I don't know if he...
Oh, no way.
Yeah, I don't know if he got the maps from Trev or whether he just found them himself. But, yeah, he was saying how his wife comes with him. She sits in the passenger seat of the Lotus Exige knitting while he's driving in the Twisties.
That's skill right there.
And,
that is skill.
And danger. Because, I mean, a knitting needle in the eye. Yeah,
that was knitting.
Particularly if a kangaroo jumps out.
Exactly.
So, anyway, look, he didn't end up buying the car. The bloke who had been lowballing me finally came to the party with some reasonable numbers, and we toed and froed a little bit because he was from Sydney and wanted to collect the car rather than ship it to Sydney. So I met him today. Payments were taken, and I watched him and his brother drive away in the car, and he messaged me.
Dude,
actually,
that's happened
this morning. Yeah, did you not see the message I sent you with the little video footage and the sad face emoji?
You do realize I've spent the past 8 hours not asleep in bed with screaming children. No, I haven't seen it.
I don't know. I sent it like 10 hours ago.
Oh, did you?
We're in the middle of a message conversation at the time. do you know? So the two really sad moments were the first one was when I wanted to retain the license plate, the number plate, which is, it's a personalized plate. It doesn't look like one, but it's RSP 380, so it's RASP and 3.8. Mm-hmm. And so I had to put a standard license plate on it. And so I got the cheapest generic Victorian number plate that you can get. And they're a really weird shape and they're just white with blue writing. They just look rubbish. And when I put that on the car, I thought, this looks crap. And then I had to peel off the last rasp sticker on the on the rear windscreen. And even after I wiped it a bunch of times, there was, you know how you get ghosting? And I'm like, it's just left its mark. I'm just going to leave it there. Every time he washes the car, he's going to wonder.
Yeah, that's funny. Every time I've sold a car with an auto amateur sticker on it, I've left the auto amateur sticker on it thinking, that's another one on the road.
Well, I kind of figured this guy, any conversations I'd had with him, he had no idea who I was or what last rasp was. And I didn't want him to, you know, come back to me in a month's time and say, oh, I've been watching all your videos. Looks like you drove the car pretty hard in Tasmania. It would have been good to know that before. You know what I mean? And so I just thought, I'll leave it. So anyway, so look, good luck to him. I hope he enjoys it. I hope he gets a lot of fun times in it. And, you know, I've been philosophical about it this afternoon. I thought, you're about to accuse me of being French here too. In 11 months of ownership, I've averaged 1,000 kilometers per month, most of which, how many miles is that, James?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out what part of that is French.
It's 620 miles, I reckon. I reckon I've done 620 miles a month. I wish I'd worked that out.
Is it the kilometers or the 1,000 miles? Oh, no, it's more like 800 odd miles. Hold on, stay there.
No.
Alexa, how much is 1,000 kilometers in miles?
1,000 kilometers is about 600 miles.
Son of a bitch. 600 miles? Well done.
There you go. So, yeah, about 600 miles. And most of that driving was, you know, in twisties, fun stuff. I did a three-day rally in Tasmania in that car. I had just done, you know, three-day rally, Alpine Range Rally in that car. So I've racked up plenty of smiles and miles in that thing. You know, some of the best driving I've ever done in that car. So, you know, I think about my mate PJ and the way he thinks about cars. You don't collect the cars, you collect the experiences. And, yeah, I've had a great experience in that car. So just now want to get Little Green back in the garage and move on to other things.
So you're Porsche-less for the next few days.
Yes, right now.
There's the tragedy right there.
I know. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to put my Jeep in the garage tonight.
No, don't do it. Don't. How dare you put that Jeep in the garage?
Well, I used to live in the garage. I've owned that car for 7 years. It was here before Little Green was, and then it was like it got kicked out of the garage.
So let's move on to our new segment.
This is
the Porsche Global Outreach Program.
Yeah, it's the Porsche Connected Vibe Moment Mates thing. We should ask the listeners what we should call it. Because clearly you and I can't come up with anything good. So this is an Porsche interesting one. I feel like
this is my one, right?
I want you got to tell me about this. Because you're the mate.
I am the mate. Yes, I know. So, all right. So 18 months ago, Lee Sibley of that podcast that we shall not name because we name it too often. I think he put something on social media about this guy based in Ukraine, works for Porsche. He works for Porsche of Kyiv, and just sort of put a spotlight on him at the beginning of the war when Russia invaded. And it was just, you know, a very kind of nice sort of, hey, check out a fellow, you know, Porsche enthusiast living in difficult times. So I followed him and I sent him a note saying, you know, wishing you the best, blah, blah, blah. And over the course of a year and a half, we've developed quite a good friendship. You know, we've been chatting every couple of days and sharing videos of our cars. And, you know, he's been watching all of my videos and translating them, you know, into Ukrainian or whatever. And it turns out he's got a daughter, same age as my middle son, Adam. So, you know, we've been sort of getting on Porsche-wise, and we've been getting on with the dad vibe. And, you know, long story short, he's increasingly feeling insecure being where he is, you know, in the middle of a war zone. And so my wife Ruthie and I, we've sponsored him on a 2-year visa to the US, him, his wife, and his child. And they're going to be arriving actually tomorrow. They're going to be arriving tomorrow. I think the day this pod hopefully will drop. And they're coming in from Europe. They're arriving in Minneapolis. They're coming with a single bag between the three of them, I think. And they're going to be living with us for a couple of months while we help get them settled. But this visa program, or emergency visa program, that the administration, the federal government, you know, put in a year or so ago, I didn't realize it existed. And somebody, in fact, my next door neighbor, has done this for a couple of Ukrainian children. She's from Ukraine herself. In fact, she grew up near Chernobyl, and so she jokes that she glows in the dark, which I think I'm not sure if I should laugh at that, or, you know, maybe put a lead wall between her house and our house. But yeah, they're arriving tomorrow, and we're like super excited to meet them, and they're going to be staying in our basement for at least a couple of weeks until we get them settled with, you know, all the things they need to do, like driver's licenses and find them a place to live. And we are going to be helping to find them work, helping to get the little girl into daycare, you know, hopefully the same one as, I guess kindergarten now, I guess. It's now the summer. So yeah, it feels like a really big thing to do. It kind of feels like a strange thing to do, but at the same time, the fact that I can help somebody out like that, it's mega. And if I may, I'm channeling my inner granddad here. My granddad Ernie was a prisoner of war in World War II, captured in Greece, shipped off to Austria, and spent 3 years basically walking around in his briefs in the snow eating potatoes with the threat of death every day. And he came out of the war, and growing up as a kid, it was so funny to see my grandmother kind of just pulling her hair out, because he would turn up with Germans, French, Dutch, Italians, Russians, who he'd bumped into in the pub or, you know, somewhere near where he lived in Preston, and invited them to come and camp on his front garden, you know, for days at a time. He was just like a very, very open, very welcoming kind of guy. And when this opportunity came along, I thought, it just made me think about my granddad Ernie. So I thought, yeah, if I can do this for a family, awesome. So now I'm going to have to try and learn how to talk Porsche in Ukrainian. It's difficult. It's a difficult language.
Yeah, no doubt. So I messaged you a couple of days ago and said, hey, you're up. You got to come up with something for our Porsche Global Outreach Vibe Friendship Connective Hands concept. And you sent me a message explaining this. And my first response was, is he kidding? But there was something about the tone of your message that I thought, no, I think he's serious. And, I got to say, I mean, first of all, you know, you think about me selling a car and feeling a bit down in the dumps about it. Talk about putting things into perspective, right? Like, you know, here's a guy worried about, you know, his future, the future of his family, genuinely concerned for their own safety, and rightly so, who feels desperate enough to pack his whole family up with one bag and travel across the world somewhere he's presumably never been to set up some kind of life there. That's, you know, that's just massive. And like I say, puts things into perspective. And then on the flip side of that, I want to acknowledge you and pay tribute to you for and Ruthie and your family for what you're doing. I think it is just an incredible act. I'm actually blown away, mate. I think it's incredible. Well done to you guys.
Cheers, bud. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's feels like a big step, but it's going to be quite an adventure. More so for them than us, but
yeah.
Thank you.
Incredible. All right. Shall we finish with video of the week?
Let's do it. I'm excited about this one. When you sent it to me, and I just thought, what on earth? What on earth is he doing? No, what?
So.
You want to talk us through it?
So in 1981, the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, was a time of superhero films. And, you know, really it was Christopher Reeve's Superman that really set the mold for superhero movies. And it set the benchmark for them to aspire to. You could argue some of them did it more successfully than others. And it might be suggested that the 1981 film Condor Man didn't quite reach the dizzying heights of Christopher Reeve in Superman.
Right.
However.
Has anyone heard of it?
I don't know. No. I don't know. I'm sure people have. Had you heard of this film?
No. But I've not heard of the film. The sequence that you sent me, I had absolutely no clue what it was. I actually thought it was a joke. But when I saw the actor, Michael Crawford, sat in the front seat, I couldn't believe it. I mean, he's the guy from Some Mothers Do Have Him.
Some Mothers Do Have Him.
Right. And now he's playing this like... Yeah, he's like a James Bond superhero driving a fancy car.
Yeah,
you know, it was ridiculous, ridiculous.
So I remember seeing this film on a family holiday when I was obviously really young, and I remember just thinking it was amazing. And I remember this sequence because he is in a kind of bright yellow, let's call it, the Condor Man ripoff of the Batmobile, you know, full of gadgets. It's just the stupidest thing you've ever seen with a rocket out the back and all that sort of business. But he's being chased by this squad of, what are they called? They're the KGB Pursuit Squad. And they are driving, there are four black 911s and then a black 935 that the boss guy drives.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really good sequence. And the stunt coordinator on that sequence was a French stunt coordinator who worked on a lot of famous chase sequences in a lot of films. And so it plays pretty well.
It does.
I mean, you could.
Apart from the bits where, you go into
the cabin.
And you see you see Michael Crawford, you know, pretending to know how to use the
buttons he has gadget to press.
He's like pushing all of the buttons randomly. You know he's making that shit up.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Like- Well, because, you know, you think about James Bond, right? Like, if he's going to shoot a cannon out the back, he'll flick a little switch, the cannon comes out, and then presses a button, it shoots. Whereas he's got this, like, 1981, it looks like a Speak and Spell or something, where he's just tapping random colored squares for like 30 seconds straight to get this thing to fire. It's so dumb.
Oh my God. And his co-pilot, the lady, sat there watching him intently like, oh yes, he's doing a really good job. He's like, he's protecting me. He knows exactly what he's doing. And he's just there like going, beep, 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 beep.
Yeah,
beep,
how about eyes on the road, mate? Because he's driving this insanely tight, twisty road. And as you pointed out, which I didn't know, what is the name of the actress?
Barbara Carrera.
Barbara Carrera.
Or maybe not Barbara.
It's Barbara.
Carrera.
It's Barbara Carrera.
Yeah.
I love that.
Carrera.
That's so good. Now, it is hard to watch because the 935 makes it through this sequence, but none of the 911s do, sadly. They all meet a somewhat fiery demise, but it is... Where do you reckon that's shot? Is that like Italy, do you think?
I don't know. I would have thought Southern California. That looks like...
It's not SoCal. It's because they go into a village and stuff like that. And I know the film... Oh. I did do a bit of research on Wikipedia because, again, I'm a crack journalist. And they talked about shooting in France, Spain, Italy,
oh, really?
And a few other places. So, yeah, it's I think it's somewhere in Europe. Someone might know if you are the one person that has gone deep on Condor Man and know where the shooting locations were, please let us know.
So this is now going to put me in a tough spot, I think, but wasn't Michael Crawford like one of the upcoming kind of cool guys, action guys, potentially sort of the British Steve McQueen at one point? You know, he was in this movie. He was in like a number of different things that were supposed to be relatively serious and relatively cool. And he ended up being known for, you know,
Some Mother's
Daughter. The Man Who Says Ooh Betty in Some Mother's Daughter. I mean, didn't he also play Phantom of the Opera in the West End?
He did, actually. That's true. He did play Phantom of the Opera. I forgot about that. So, I mean, imagine being him. I'm sure he probably went and studied at the best drama school. He's probably a triple threat, right? He can act, he can sing, he can dance, you know, all of that. Yeah. And then he ends up on Some Mothers Do Have Them doing that ridiculous accent and the catchphrase. You know, he's basically, what's his name, Ricky Gervais in, what's the show? Is he having a laugh? He's basically that character. And somehow he's a superhero in this film. I don't get it. But
oh my god,
it's a bit of fun. All right. I think it's worth just saying as well, just quickly, watch it on YouTube. I'm not sure I'd commit the time to watching the entire film.
Absolutely. Just watch that sequence.
Exactly. Well, my friend, this has been fun.
Good job. Good job. Watch out for those kangaroos.
All right. Well, do you know what? Before we do wrap it up, I do just want to acknowledge and say thank you to everybody who's been posting on their Instagram stories that, you know, photos of them listening to our episodes in the car, although make sure you keep both hands on the wheel when you're taking photos while you're driving, and the wonderful comments we're getting and the DMs that people send. It's really, really encouraging. And we do want to keep bringing you guys this content because we enjoy it. We love these conversations. I'm sure James wakes up in the morning and thinks, I can't believe I have to do this. To be honest, I really wanted to go to bed right before this started, but it's been the absolute highlight of my day. So I hope you guys can tell how much we enjoy doing this when you listen to it. And hopefully you get a bit of that out of it too.
Absolutely. Thanks for checking in, guys. See you in the next episode.
Take care, guys. Bye.